You are listening to episode 100 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Triple Digits.
So, speaking of manufacturing, your BFF had a recent test on one of the cars that he manufactures.
I think he's technically my man crush, but...
Your man crush. There we go. Well, remember, he gave you a present last
week. That's true, so, man. He's awesome.
He's reciprocating now, so... Woo! So you got that. So anyways, Mr. Musk had his car put through, their five-star crash test stuff, the NHTSA? The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, pretty much like crashed a bunch of their cars. He was pretty happy with his Model S sedan.
Yeah.
Sounded like it did pretty well. Go ahead.
You had a couple of rocket scientists sit down and were told, hey, design something that won't break under incredible forces. And they said, okay. And because if you think about it, I mean, there's a lot of interbreeding that goes on between SpaceX and Tesla. So it's not really crazy to unexpected to see that basically they came up with this like space age structural thing for crash safety, and when push came to shove, they didn't move, literally.
Yeah, so they were saying, of note, during the validation of the Model S roof crush protection at an independent commercial facility, the testing machine failed at just above 4 Gs. So they said, while the exact number is uncertain due to the Model S breaking the testing machine, what it means is that at least 4 additional fully loaded Model S vehicles could be placed on top of an owner's car without the roof actually caving in.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
It's a pretty safe vehicle. I guess part of it also doesn't like flip or anything because it's got the weight's really low because of the batteries.
Yeah.
And because it has just like a teeny little engine, it's not this, you know, fireball thing. It actually can crumple correctly.
Right. Well, and they said that one of the big things that was going on was that, you know, that these tests are very well known. So a lot of times cars are designed specifically to pass the test. And what was really and one of the big things that they got into with the Tesla was it kind of misses the fact that they're like they got 5-star ratings and they it's like the safest car that's ever been manufactured actually misses the point. It undersells the car because a lot of these companies can get great ratings by designing specific, you know, areas of the car to crumple to protect those for them, you know, to mm-hmm. pass those specific tests. Whereas the Tesla was designed as, you know, has safety features that they didn't even test and has good performance in areas where you're not even monitored by that. You're not judged by that category, which is crazy then. I mean, they just kind of went above and beyond the call because they wanted this car to be unimpeachable in every way. So they designed these amazing cars.
All right, David, when are you getting the Model S?
I don't want the Model S, man. That's a lot of bread, though.
Oh, that's a lot of dough.
Although I think I would be, what they need to do is get Google self-driving car and Tesla together, because as soon as a car can drive my butt around, I think that'll be the first, because I usually buy used cars, and that would be the first brand spanking new car I'd buy. I do not like driving. So
Alon has already talked to the founders of and leaders at Google, and has said that the only reason why they're not working together right now is because there's no commercially viable path for the current technology that Google is using. It's which is their LiDAR thing, their laser radar, is way too expensive. You could never build a commercial car. So he said once they've got it figured out with a more commercially viable monitor, then
I'm ready to go.
Yeah, pretty much. And he's said that they're looking at other options. That's definitely something that Tesla is, that Elon and Tesla are very, very interested in.
Well, I like you're on a first name basis with this guy. The man crush is getting deep.
Yeah, man. He is. He's awesome.
he's awesome.
My roommate, she works at a hotel where a lot of really cool guys get to show up and use her hotel, movie stars, musicians, tech guys, and it's funny, like, everybody will come, and she'll be like, oh yeah, guess who I met today? I got to meet, Bono from U2, and people are like, oh my gosh, I love him, and you're like, or I got to meet, Justin Bieber, and like, oh my gosh, I love him, and then, but I, when she's like, yeah, I got to meet Elon Musk today, I was like, what, ah? You know, and I was like, oh my God, I love him, and she's like, that, I wasn't expecting that. I guess what my greater point in this is, I don't know, gosh, they just do so much right with these cars. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I want one so bad. I have to drive by the factory every day. Look longingly.
Yeah, they're expensive, man. Yeah, like, I looked at it for giggles, and I'm like, they're a lot of bread.
Yeah, they're about a decade out from me being able to afford one, I think. But wow, when I can...
I like it. As your older brother, remember to put money in your retirement fund first, and then buy whatever toys you want. Unless you want to retire in the car.
You can retire in the Tesla, James. That is the retirement plan.
Done. Just travel to
home anymore with one.
Yeah. Electricity is free. I just have to go to a supercharge station and they'll do it for free, James. I don't need retirement.
They probably even have snacks there that you can
eat. And if it's an automated car, you just live life on the road. You just let that car drive you around.
Oh, I love it.
Exactly.
Never mind, I take it back.
The best idea.
Yeah.
Don't save for retirement. Save for that car.
No, it's saving in a different way. It's putting your eggs in with the lawn and just saying, take care of me, big cat.
I'll ride this rocket to Mars with you. Let's go.
I'm ready to go.
Exactly. That's not even a joke, though. I'm actually going to do that.
I like
Riding a rocket to Mars with Elon wouldn't be a bad idea right now in terms of a retirement plan, since they have no technology to bring you back home. So that would be a good retirement plan. And you're flying out there, might not be coming back, but...
We actually, we half-jokingly, like, seriously considered actually sponsoring someone to apply to go to Mars through that other goofy program, because there's something.
Well, they're gonna use the SpaceX rockets. I mean, that is their plan.
I know. We thought about sponsoring someone, but we didn't really feel like sponsoring going to die somewhere.
Exactly.
It's awkward. Yeah, that's
quite ready for that one. We want to keep our listeners within
range. Sends the wrong brand message. Instead, you guys went with beer mugs and T-shirts instead of the bar sponsorship.
Well, you know, whatever.
So this is somewhat related. I read a really interesting article that was titled "Why Silicon Valley Funds Instagrams, Not Hyperloops," and it asks the question. You know, I think everybody looks to, you know, Elon did his whole thing because he is right. Irritated by the bullet train in California, because it's a terrible piece of technology we're paying way too much for and not getting enough out of. So he said, here's an alternative little thing. And it's always been kind of framed as a government works project. But this article was really asking the question, why can't this public utility be looked at as taken on as a private endeavor? I mean, it doesn't cost that much. Is what the biggest argument is. Is usually you think of government works things as stuff that are on such a scale that you could never afford it through private investors. But if Elon is right, this is affordable. So why isn't it happening? And basically, this article it takes this specific question of Instagram versus the Hyperloop and turns it into kind of a larger what's wrong with investing in the Silicon Valley. So these are the eight theories of why they won't do that. Theory number one, the IPO market is terrible. Basically saying that the stock market used to be a place where entrepreneurs went and raised money for their companies. Now the stock market isn't and that's not really what it's used for anymore. It's all about micro trading. It's all about it's looked at as its own commodity. The stock market isn't influenced by the value of the company like it was maybe even 30 today, like it was 30 years ago. And so the IPO market makes it very difficult for investors to come in, and it's kind of toxic to large endeavors like the Hyperloop. Theory number two, contemporary portfolio strategy favors layups and discourages three-pointers. So they, you know, it's really common nowadays, like, you know, the Sharks TV show on
Shark Tank,
yeah, where it's all about doing little micro investments in tons and tons of different companies. You're going to have 10 failures and one success, and the one success is going to make up for the 10 failures. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the investing strategy. And this guy says, yeah, that works to some degree, but it totally destroys some good ideas that can never take off, things like the Hyperloop. And he said, and the thing is that's not really how it's always been. You know, it's a shotgun versus a sniper approach. Shotgun just kind of shoot scattered and, you know, hit as many targets as you can versus a shotgun or versus a sniper where you take your time, you aim, and you go for a long haul. And, which is an interesting, you know, a comparison. And he's basically saying that there's a mentality that doesn't need to exist, that does exist, that prevents big projects from being taken on. Theory number three, there's a quote that gets thrown around a lot. We don't fund ideas. And this is coupled closely with the minimally viable product. And it's these two ideas that kind of come in. These are two different theories. Ideas where you don't make a business plan, you make a product. You don't sell an idea to raise money. You build the product, and it's got to be, you know, you build the app. And then once you have an app and a user base, that's when you get investment from angels to really take it to scale. And that's impossible with something like the Hyperloop, because you'd have to lay down, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles of track and build an actual thing before you'd have anything that looked like a product.
Would you have to? You couldn't do a scale model of some sort that's significantly less?
Well, I think you could prove the tech.
little train around the thing.
I don't know. You know, well, you know, you do something like that. You prove out some of the core technologies and ideas and go, okay, we just need to now put them together. One of the startups you were working on, weren't they doing a cement factory and they did something similar to that?
They wanted to. They were getting, yeah. Yes, yes.
That's and right,
it was,
yes.
It was difficult. They were incredibly impressed that they were able to raise $100 million. These guys need to be able to raise $5 billion in order to build a Hyperloop. You know, it's just a different scale of thing. Okay. And which is crazy, because you think about this, like, this could fundamentally change the world and in how we do cement and how we do power consumption. They could barely raise $100 million. Instagram got bought for $1 billion, you know. So it's like, you know, it's a different scale of things, and you can't get the scale that you need from investors nowadays. Theory number five: the market rewards exits, not innovation and value. So basically, everybody wants to know what the exit strategy is, because that's when investors make their money, as opposed to the more traditional thing of you invest in companies, you hang on to it for the long haul, you direct the company forward over time, and you make money
that
way.
Well, I think on the like that VC level, they do want to know the exit strategy, because they are tying up hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, it's not a 30, 40 year retirement plan.
Right. You know? And the thing is that
I get it. That's pretty normal, I think, for them to ask that. I mean, that's what I was taught.
It's one of those things where he's saying it is normal, but it totally kills good ideas, or it prevents them. And investors, that one's kind of dumb. Investors are too specialized. I don't think that's – I actually don't know if that's a fair it's his theory. I don't agree with him on it, so I'm not even going to read that one. Theory number seven, most angels and VCs are wimps. Basically, nobody's willing to take on a really big risk. Nobody's willing to. Everybody wants to throw money, kind of dilly around with it for a little bit, be bouncing back and forth, but nobody's going to be going in and hard, and there's not a lot of people that are real innovators and visionaries in the VC markets.
You know what would be really interesting, and I just don't know the answer to this. I'm not even really sure how to look this up, but I'm sure you could figure it out. But it would be interesting to look at the average VC age over the years, because because you hear about a whole bunch of people who, you know, like, oh, this guy's been around forever and he's amazing, and you know, he picked all these, you know, 7 or 8 awesome companies, and you know, but then there are, you know, they've been around for a while, but we also know that as you get older, you do get more risk adverse, and right. You know, you do get more conservative just because you have more to lose, and that would be interesting, just to see, you know, if that's part of the case where, yeah, when they first had nothing to lose and they were trying to make a name for themselves, they went for the big moonshots and it was awesome, but now that they, you know, now that they are solid, they're like, we don't want to kind of lose this, you know, reputation. Right. I don't know. That's a quantitative question that can be answered.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's it was an interesting. This is a couple more. They don't like trusting first time entrepreneurs, which Alon is a different case, I think, but that definitely does play a fact. And then
especially with that much money.
Yeah. Yeah, and then his last theory is the real reason is that we're all sheep. There's nobody who's willing to, you know, you find something that works and everybody goes for it and nobody tries to divert ever. So,
I actually think that's a cool article. I was going to go back and read the whole thing. But one thing I was thinking about during that is kind of back to like business school where there's things that should happen from the government, there's things that should happen from private industry, and there's things that should happen from not-for-profits. And it feels like the Hyperloop, like you would not want a private investor to own the Hyperloop.
But private investors own the airlines. Maybe. I mean, and, you know, and it's a that to me. I mean, obviously, you would need. I think it would become a public utility, like right. Power companies or internet or the airline industry. You know, I don't see any reason to really think that somebody can't own the railroads. You know, somebody owns the railroads. The railroads aren't government. You know, aren't
true.
Always. You know, so I don't understand why this it. To me, it actually is. It doesn't necessarily make sense to have it be a government project because it will almost certainly cost more if it is. You know, there are huge advantages to having the government do it, and there would be need. You would require government oversight and government cooperation, as you would with any, you know, major public utility. But the idea that it needs to even the bullet train in California, part of the law was that you'd have to have a third of the money. It was going to be a $30 billion project. It's now up to $100 billion. But the first 10 of it was going to come from state bonds. 10 of it was going to come from federal loans and then 10 billion of it was supposed to come from private investors. You know, it was supposed to be a third owned by private companies. Private individuals, and they haven't gotten a cent from private individuals because there's no market plan that actually will have it make any money when it does finally launch, and it's incredibly expensive at this point. So, you know, but I think they're running into that big problem of why would investors invest in it? You know, it's a for the same reason. You know, it's suffering from some of these traits as well. But it bums me out because I want to see the Hyperloop because I like.
I want a Hyperloop. Would have helped me last week.
Yeah. That's right. I would have.